Welcome to Mojo for the Modern Man. This is your host, Ken Mossman, and today I am thrilled to be joined for Act 2 of my conversation with David Jurasik. Now, if you haven't listened to Act 1, because there's so much context that gets set in Act 1, absolutely listen to it before digging in here. Come back and dig in, for sure. But listen to that first. And we're going to dig into more of the arena of David's work in the world. There's more history to be gathered before we get there. And David, once again, without spilling too many spoilers here, what are listeners going to hear in Act 2?
I think, Ken, you're a master of asking really deep and beautiful questions. So there's two pieces that I think we went even deeper than the first episode, where how did I get from a place of being depressed for 20 years and suicidal, rootless and restless, to a place of feeling deep love and belonging? There's some key moments that broke my heart open into that world. Mm. And then the other piece is, I mean, we went like really far and deep into eldership and the transcendent, and also what does it mean to be a mature man, a whole man, and how do we even get there? Yeah, quite a ride. Thank you so much.
Yeah, a delight, and quite a ride it is. And for those of you who did listen to Act 1, Grandma shows up here, so stay tuned.
Yeah. Well, happy to honor her. Yeah,
for sure, and beautifully done. And there's a whole lot more. Reminder, if you have not yet, please subscribe to Mojo for the Modern Man, wherever you get your podcasts. And with that, let's dive on into this rich, rich conversation with David Jurasik. Enjoy. David Jurasik, welcome back for Act 2 of our two-part conversation. It's a delight to have you here yet again.
Oh, it's been a thrill so far. Thanks,
Kit. Yeah, let's rock it. So I'm aware that I said toward the, I guess in the latter third of Act 1, I wanted to bring your grandmother back in. Mm. So let's bring your grandmother. You know, you had reflected on that on the trip, you know, and creating the documentary. Tell us a little bit about your, or a lot about your grandmother, and what was so important in your relationship with her?
Ooh, wow. I think I've struggled most of my life relating to women. I think that's where I'll start. That mother wound was pretty strong. My mom is an amazing woman, but there was some wounding between us. And there's a presence in my grandmother that was really healing. I mean, she was this little woman, Muslim, Bosnian, displaced by the Nazis and then displaced by the communists, and landed in another country she didn't want to be in, and met my grandfather and so on. But she was just like, she had this way of embodying unconditional love. Mm. And she could take her like wooden spoon and whip your ass, like literally, if you're out of place, you know, she'd hit you, she'd spank you with fierceness. But there was always this embrace in her arms. You come from school, when we stayed with her and you're sad or crying, she would comfort. She only had one eye. She had a glass eye that was, her eye was poked out by the Nazis. Mm. So when she napped in the afternoon, her eye was open watching you, you know, this glass eye. But it was always, it was such a beautiful thing, because she saw me. She saw me in a way, I guess, you know, this is the gift that some elders can have. They can see you in a way that your parents can't, that your uncles can't, and aunties can't, and your peers can't. She saw into my worthiness, my goodness, that I was worthy of love, that I didn't have to perform tricks or please her. Yeah, I could fall asleep next to her, you know, in the middle of the afternoon. I could just relax around her. And I think that's a rare gift in this world. Yeah.
What compelled you, called you, whatever language you want to use? Because you know, we did touch on the trip. You mentioned that you made the film. What was it like? You know, the Berlin Wall fell in 1989. You know, what year did you go back to Eastern Europe with her?
It was 2003, maybe.
Okay, it was that late. So
yeah.
What was
there? Was also a war in Yugoslavia in the 90s, right?
Oh yeah.
So this is like the first time to come back and start. It is still at that time. It was huge shells everywhere, villages destroyed. They didn't rebuild. You know, you could see all the scars of war. My grandmother was getting old, and she had this, you know, it's funny. It's like her mind started to fragment a bit, where one day she said, "I love your grandfather, who's now passed away. He was amazing." And the next day saying, "He was terrible." And he's saying, "I love being here. I hate being here." Like, parts of her started to leak out. And she had this deep longing to go back to her homeland in Bosnia. And also like terror, because she knew if she goes back there, it's not going to be like it was when she was younger. So she wanted company. And she got my mom involved, my aunt and myself. And I had a video camera and I made it into a documentary. But that was a really heartbreaking trip to watch her revisit places and people she loved are no longer. My great-grandfather's grave was desecrated by the Serb, you know, army that went through, and we found places of like, yeah, trauma, ancestral wounds. It all got poked. At the same time, it was really beautiful, because I felt, until that trip, I felt I didn't have my own roots in the world. And I think this is the beauty of ancestry and eldership, is they can help remind us where we come from. Not to define where we're going, but to say, yeah, you come from somewhere. People have bled and sweat for you to be here. You didn't pop out of the universe, you know, randomly. There's stuff that we carried and we put into our genes that we gave you also, all the epigenetics, right? It's all here. And sometimes it can be embodied in the land. Like, this is the place where your grandparents were massacred, or this is the place where we first moved to 3 generations ago, or, you know, like, there's power in that, in looking backwards. I think we've forgotten in this age, right?
Yeah. I'm going like in 16 different directions as I listen to you, David. And I want to come back to you, you know, you personally, and as you look at, you know, that trip with your grandmother, what I'm hearing there is that the range of experience was, I mean, it was just about anything on the continuum. It sounded like you experienced it during that trip.
Yeah.
How were you changed?
Well, there are a couple moments that I kind of think embody that. One was, I went to a place in Sarajevo where a lot of my relatives were trapped during the war. I was in Canada, you know, escaped as refugees, living in a safe place. And I was watching it on the news, and they couldn't get out. And they were being, snipers were trying to kill them every day. And I found the place where the tunnel was. There's this tunnel, this famous place near the outskirts of Sarajevo, where they found a way to get out. And I met these two, I was doing this interviews with people I met, and I met these two guys who were like, yeah, we're our neighbors were trying to kill us. And I said to them, why didn't you, in my broken Serbo-Croatian, because I'm Czech, and I said to them, why didn't you escape? Because you're still here and you didn't leave. And he just looked at me like I was crazy. He said, well, this is home. This is home. And I met other people who had beautiful hillside mansions, you know, in the countryside, and they couldn't wait to get the hell out of there. And they had fantasies of traveling on cruise ships or whatever. And then I realized, like, there's people who are rooted in this world and there's people who are rootless and restless. And I don't want to be the latter anymore. So the second part of that is once I went further on the trip on my own, I went to this place called Medjugorje. It's a famous place for Christians to go because literally that time when we were escaping as refugees, at the time it was 20 years before. I was 27 and we escaped at age 7. So it was literally 20 years. And it was a mountain very close to there. Medjugorje is just south of there. And on that mountain, 2 years earlier, and the same month, same roughly the same time, the Virgin Mary appeared to teenagers and said she was there to protect the children. And since then, millions of people go as a pilgrimage to Medjugorje. And she's the Mother of Mercy. And when we were escaping, I was 7 years old. I didn't know any of this. I wasn't even that religious. But when we were escaping, at one point as we were crossing the mountain, I was so terrified. I was holding my mother's hand. She was holding my brother and my dad, and we were going through the thicket. I turned back, and I saw the Virgin Mary. I saw like an angelic female figure reaching out to me, telling me it's going to be okay.
Wow.
I told that story to my family, and they thought I was a little crazy. Literally, like my mom thought I was delusional and was worried about me. But what's crazy to me is that 20 years later, I go to a mountain really close to there, and that's literally, they had a statue of her, and it's like, that's exactly what she looked like. And I met one of the teenagers who is now middle-aged, and I listened to her describe, because she still talks to her every month. She appears to her at the same place at the same time every month. She talked with so much love, motherly love towards children, the innocent. And so I went up that mountain, and I told you in the last episode, I was depressed, right? I was 20 years of depression. I couldn't be in a relationship. I was dark. I tried to kill myself earlier. When I went up on that mountain, I sat by the statue. There's a huge storm brew and everyone ran away. It was like, oh God, this is going to be a hailstorm. And I wept for 3 hours. I just sat there and I just cried and I cried and I couldn't stop crying. And when I came down from that mountain, I went back to Czech Republic and my homeland. And I, for the first time since I was 7 and we escaped, I felt love for people. I felt grief. I felt love. I felt something, all these emotions stirring in my chest and my guts. It's like the pipes had been burst open, you know, and the depression was gone. That was the most momentous part of it. And then I felt my roots in the world. I felt like I belonged with the people that I love. Didn't matter where they were. And funny enough, that week when I went back to my home village, there was this old woman who walked by and she said, oh, how are you doing? And I said, oh, good. And I spoke to her in Czech. And she looked at me kind of go, yeah, your Czech is pretty good for a foreigner. And then she shook her head and walked away. It's like she's saying, you don't belong here, right? And there were a lot of people who were angry with people who left, jealous and angry. She was one of them, one of the neighbors. But I didn't let that sting me. I was like, no, I know where I stand is where I belong. You can't tell me I belong or I don't belong. Only I can tell myself that. So that was a really life-defining trip. Healed a lot of those kind of displacement wounds, you know? I think there's a gift in being settlers and living somewhere your whole life, knowing the land and the people and the neighbors. And there's also a gift in being displaced. If you end up finding yourself, finding your place, there's a gift in it.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah, thanks for that, David. What? I mean, you've given us lots of hints. lots of breadcrumbs here.
I love doing that.
But I don't want to make up anything. So, what, you know, as you look retrospectively through your entire history here, you know, what is it that really has led you to the work that you do now? Aside from all of it, of course.
I think it's hard to answer that question.
If it was easy, it wouldn't be that interesting, I think.
Yeah, wow. I mean, the quickest answer is there's something in my soul. I think everyone has that inner compass, that inner knowing part. I have experienced my soul in key moments of my life where it saved my life and it led me to be where I am. But I think it's also like, I don't know if you believe this. I think it's going to sound a little crazy, but you know, before you come into this body, I do believe you kind of choose your parents and you choose your moment to enter this world. And there's a lot that my parents struggled with and their parents struggled with. And I feel like it's part of my destiny to try to reconcile the divisions, the wounds, it's part of my nature to be an explorer, a healer. But I also think specifically, like there's cultural healing, there's healing between men and women, within men. We all have unique experience, right? Like you have a guitar up there and music is probably a very powerful part of your life. And for me, it's filmmaking and visual arts and all those threads. I believe that, you know, all these threads of our lives, all the things that happen to us, there's also a golden thread that ties them together. That is a dynamic. It's more than just your sort of singular purpose at this moment. It's like there's a theme to your life, right? And for me, I think the theme has been to bring together, to heal rifts and disparate parts and bring them into integrity. Then when I follow that thread, when I honor it, I feel at peace, no matter how challenging things are. If I don't, I feel restless, unhappy, lost, confused. Yeah.
What parts of yourself, have yet to heal?
Well, if you asked me a few months ago, I'd be like, there's a long list here. No, there was a time where I had a very long list. This was around my late 20s when I was suicidal. I literally made a list and I worked through that fucking list for decades. That list is getting smaller, which is really amazing. There's a point, I think, too, when you're wounded, everyone's wounded at some degree.
Of course.
There's a point where you're healing. There's a point where you're just trying to cope, right? Survive. There's a point where you're actually healing. You're actually dealing with the wounds, the core stuff. And then there's a point where doesn't even feel like healing anymore. It's more like evolving. It's like, oh yeah, this used to be really fucked up. I was a mess. And then I healed a lot. And then I got much more functional. And now it's more about like, oh, wow, where else can this take me? Because I feel like it's good enough. It's strong enough. It's healthy enough. I don't feel, I can list to you my top wounds.
No, I'm actually really curious about, because here's let me give it some context, and it might be listing your top wounds, but I think we covered some of them. I love what you just said about the way we approach working on ourselves. And to me, you know, metaphorically, as you were speaking there, I imagined, oh, okay, you know, I stemmed the bleeding. You know, I got the XYZ transplanted. I'm not worried about, you know, metaphorically, you know, the big stuff is handled. But it's like, oh yeah, like my lips are chapped, I was cooking and I cut myself, you know, with a knife that was too dull. It's those. Because on the one hand, yeah, there is this bigger work, if you will.
Yeah.
But I think oftentimes, you know, it's like the little tune-ups.
Yeah.
You know, the little tune-ups. And I think that was really the spirit of the question. It's like, what's the... Because I wouldn't expect it would be quote-unquote big stuff. I think otherwise I would probably not be talking to you yet. Maybe. But yeah, I think what's... Because in my world, and this isn't like, oh my God, the work is never done. But in my world, the work is never done.
No, it's not. No.
Yeah.
And it's much more exciting. I think a lot of people stop at coping, or if they go through healing, they stop at functional. I'm functional. My wife and I are not fighting, and you know, I've got a good job I like now, and oh, this is great. And that's where they stop. And that's just not in my nature. But I'm also not trying to make shit up or force anything.
Right, right.
To me, what's coming up for me this year, there's two things. One is, and I think this is really aligned with your mission around growing men, helping men to grow the fuck up. For the longest time in my life, I felt like a fragmented mirror. And it took me decades to figure out what all the pieces are. And some of those pieces were fucking cutting, making other people, hurting people, hurting me. And I've come into gluing all those pieces together like a mosaic, right? I know who I am. I know my wholeness and I know my parts. But that's just the beginning of the story, really. Because now what? And for me, part of my mission is becoming about helping men to come into that kingship, that kind of unifying, integrated whole self. The guy who's at the head of the table, who knows all the saboteurs, who knows all the allies, who knows everyone at the table, and who knows who's missing from the table.
Yeah.
And he's constantly working at making that whole work even better. That's the kind of leadership we need in the world. And so that's happening inside.
You can't hear this if you're listening, but I'm shaking my head in agreement. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
How to empower that? How to inspire men to do that kind of work instead of just trying to handle the fires, put out the fires, or react to the places where we're bleeding. The other piece, though, that I see that's part of that is, okay, now I'm a good king. I've been told again and again, I know how to rule well, and people want to follow me. What's it for? And one of the missions for me that I'm seeing very, very clearly is to reconcile the wounding between men and women. And primarily I work with men, so I get to do that with men, but I'm working on experiments this year to bring men and women together. And it's quite charged. Like half the room saying to me, David, you know, we're all like human beings. It's non-binary and gender is just a construct. And the other half saying, that's fucking bullshit. I'm a man, you're a woman. We've hurt each other. And our society keeps telling us to not trust each other and keeps wounding us in unique and distinct gender-typed ways. We need to fucking heal and deal with this. And so there's this like new, that's the terrain for me these days is how do I bring all of my parts, all my gifts to enter that space and help men and women to heal. And often it's helping men and how they relate to women. You know, it's a sort of to me, it's a bit of a shadow piece. When men go into men's work, it's obvious that they're going to work on their relationship with men, brotherhood,
right,
and also their relationship to fathers, because there's some leader in the room and they're going to get all stirred up with structure and leadership and authority. And that's just like, that's the first instinct, right? And it's beautiful. And I see so much healing and growth. But sometimes we avoid addressing the elephant in the room. It's like, how do I relate to women? My wife, my daughter, my mom, she's not here to represent herself or to trigger me. So that's the edge for me. That's where I've been going lately. And it's fertile terrain, let me tell you.
How is your, this is because you bring that up, and we're going to start to wrap in just a minute here. As you look at, you know, because you mentioned all of your parts, how is your, if you look at your own, because we all carry these energies, and I'm going to use the gendered terms for these energies, masculine, yeah, feminine.
Yeah.
How's the relationship between your own inner masculine and feminine?
Oh, that's a beautiful question. Until about 6 months ago, I'd say I was very connected to the masculine, the male divine, the male figures of warrior, king, lover, magician, all that. And a strong, healthy father figure. I feel like I have made peace with that. But until about 6 months ago, I was quite wounded still in my relationship to the feminine. That's what's, you know, precipitated me leaning into this more. And I've gone through so much healing in with my wife and my mom too recently, my daughter as well, where I have this very deep and beautiful connection to a loving, nurturing, but also fierce feminine. It's very different from the masculine presence. And I can feel both of their, you know, in terms of like, if I pray to a higher power, I feel both papa and mama energy. And they're very different. And they completely complement each other and give me incredible peace. And I can't find that from, you know, my mom. She's a beautiful woman. She can't give me that. Those energies are bigger than can be embodied by one person, right? And this is the first time in my life, I'm 47, I can say, like, I feel like I have the keys to the universe. I have connection to the masculine and feminine. I feel whole. Holy fuck. And life is just really getting started. You know? It's not the end of the story. Now what? How do bring that in out into the world more? How do I help others to connect to that? How do I deepen that? It's endless, right? And how do I embody that with my daughter? She needs me to be a mixture of masculine and feminine. At any one moment, she needs a little different kind of love and care. I'm going to fail her many times, but how can I also help her and be there for her in a deep way? So yeah, it feels really balanced. And that's a new thing for me to say that, to feel that.
We had some conversation. Of course, you and I were together as we're recording this. You and I were together via Zoom in a group of elder men's work leaders, mm-hmm, or men's work leader elders, I should say. And one of the conversations that we had later on, I can't remember whether you were still with us via Zoom or if it was after we had wrapped for the day, but and it might have even been in the car. Sean Harvey and I were driving back to my place from Boston, but having a conversation about, you know, about eldership, you know, being, you know, conscious eldership, being in some ways post-archetypal, you know, mm-hmm, beyond the archetypes, where the and of course, you know, transcending and including, it's not like the archetypes go away, But what you're describing to me anyway is it is some of that. It's like, oh, you know, all my parts are present, accounted for, you know, they're plugged in, they're functioning. They're not in need of the tune-ups that they used to be. You know, I've made peace with them. I know how to tap into them. Mm-hmm. But there's something beyond that where I can show up as any and all of them, you know, as needed or as I'm curious about. Where was I going with that? I'm not exactly sure where I was going with that.
That's a beautiful, you know, what's really striking to me is when we become mature, integrated, it's just, there's enormous freedom. Like, if someone came to attack my family, I know how to kill them. But I also have deep love and compassion, and I don't want to hurt a fly, right? And there's a freedom in a range of, like, I'm not constrained to be the nice guy or the tough guy or any fucking box that you give me. Because I go, I got lots of dudes in here and lots of women in here and weirdos. I got a whole fucking village in here. So I can meet you on so many levels. And what a joy that is. What a freedom that is. And I'm always going to be learning more.
Yeah.
And the universe is endless. So there's always going to be more to discover. But there's nothing essential missing anymore. And I think that's a beautiful place to be. And I think that to me would be the definition of eldership, is when we're healed enough, whole enough, that when we're not even fully showing up, which is normal, we know what's missing and how to get back, you know, back to it. And I so wish for a world where there's more of us at that, playing at that level.
Yeah. Yeah. As do I. We have our work cut out for us. What an honor to be able to do it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It's a joy.
Yeah. Thank you. As is spending time with you, dear man. So way more to come. David Jurassic, thank you so much for joining me. It's been an absolute delight.
All of that. It's amazing. Thank you, Ken.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me, Ken Mossman, your host here on Mojo for the Modern Man. And of course, David Jurassic, my guest here for these past two episodes. I do hope that you come back and listen to this one. I hope you come back and listen to all of them again and again and again. And there's some real magic that I know in these two conversations with David that, like conversation is almost always with this man, magical and worth revisiting again and again and again. Learn more about David, follow the links in the intro notes for today's show or for Act One. And next week, I'm going to be joined by Howie James Oma. Howie is a beautiful, beautiful man who hails from Kenya. He does amazing work in the world with young men who find their way into the Kenyan penal system. He has an amazing story to tell, and I'm not going to give away too many spoilers, but Act One of that conversation is next week, depending on when you're listening to this, and I invite you to come and check that one out for sure. Quick shout out of thanks to Carly Farrar for her copywriting expertise, to Megan Johnson for her general assistance and keeping me going in a good straight line. Both Megan and Carly are with Knack & Company, and that is Megan's virtual assistant company, and so much more. And of course, to Josh Hines for his sound and musical expertise that brings every episode of Mojo for the Modern Man together so beautifully. Invitation, if you have not, subscribe to Mojo for the Modern Man wherever you get your podcasts, and come on by my website, kenmossman.com. We'll get you there, see what I've got going on, sign up for my weekly writings. There is a free gift a piece that I, it's a training actually, a piece that I did on control and what has us reach for control, as well as antidotes, some potent antidotes for the trap of control. So go grab that. It is yours for the taking. With that, be well, take care, and we'll see you back here soon on Mojo for the Modern Man.